Welcome to Indie Film Weekly. It is April 21st. My name is Ryan Koo. I'm the founder of No Film School.
And I'm Micah Van Hove, a writer for No Film School.
On this week's show, we are coming to you from Las Vegas, Nevada, at the world's largest film video trade show, NAB. So usually on Indie Film Weekly, we are catching you up on the stories you might have missed while you were busy working on film projects. This week, we're going to skip some of the sections we normally go through, like the movies opening, the grant opportunities, festival deadlines, because we are here in Las Vegas and we actually have no idea what's going on in the world.
It's a special edition, special NAB edition of Indie Film Weekly, if you will.
NAB stands for the National Association of Broadcasters. We are only interested in the filmmaking relevant gear at No Film School. So when you get here at NAB, it is the Las Vegas Convention Center. It's full of, 2 million square feet or something they say? But there's a lot of broadcast trucks, broadcast switchers, things that are of no interest to filmmakers. We're not going to be talking about those.
It's a lot of tacky carpet.
Yeah. So Micah, let's talk a little bit about your experience. How have you found this edition of NAB to be?
I haven't really had too much time to intellectualize, really. Feels like always running to do the next thing, whether it's trying to shove food in my face. It's a lot like a film festival. You know, it's like my goals are like, how do I stay healthy somewhat, get a little bit of sleep? How am I able to continue to work at a high level and also, like, you know, be able to get something, you know, see some stuff that I want to see at the same time? So it's kind of like a juggling match. But in terms of what I've seen on the floor and the general feeling of the convention, it's been a pretty mellow year. I feel like last year and the last 2 years that we've come has been a lot more like craziness and a lot more buzz floating around and a lot more hype and just more, felt like a more, in previous years, it's felt like a bigger stage and like there's more at stake. This year feels a lot more like, bridging the gap between last year and whatever's coming next year.
A bridge year. Yeah, usually Monday there's some huge announcement that goes out, usually from the camera companies. It's Blackmagic, it's Canon. In this case, there haven't been the sort of single headline feature announcement that really blew everybody away. But there have been a lot of really interesting things kind of in more of the iterative world, integrating a lot of different services and products. So we're going to do a dive through categories of what we've seen at NAB. Otherwise, it would just be a disorganized, long podcast. And, you know, it's probably going to be a disorganized and long podcast either way. But now we're going to have categories. Our NAB coverage is brought to you by Blackmagic Design, Shutterstock, and Rode Microphones, which we're currently talking into in our hotel. It's not exactly a recording booth, so if it doesn't sound like it normally does,
forgive us, please. We are closing in on 100 videos, though. We have been walking around a lot, and the editors, we got Jordan Chunu and Jared just churning out videos from the press room. They're kicking ass.
One of our shooters, Sean, also is a swing. He shot the first couple of days and has been editing. We have, I guess there were 11 of us total here this year.
We're rolling deep, man. We got, we're formidable. The press room kind of feels like our room.
Yeah, at NAB, there is a press room. They serve you sandwiches. They serve you coffee. Wonderful people. There's a back corner with some cubicles. And I don't know if other people just don't like cubicles or they just like think that we have ownership, but we go back and dominate that back row all day, every day.
I think it is a psychological thing. You're just year after year pummeling the concepts into the convention center people that's our spot. And, you know, if you want to step to us, I don't know, maybe consider a bribe or some kind of...
They could actually just step to us. Between the two of us, we have two torn labrums in our shoulders, so we're definitely not throwing any haymakers in a fight. There's some other crews here, but I feel like we could take most of them.
You shouldn't give away our vulnerabilities of our physicality. in this format, I don't think.
Because I am not right-handed.
We're going to... Ooh.
Actually, no, I am.
That's tricky. But in terms of things that actually matter...
let's get to the show.
Yeah.
First up in our NAB recap, what else? Cameras. Let's talk about cameras.
Cameras, yeah. I mean, cameras... I don't know. My opinion on cameras, just in general, is like cameras are done. Like, cameras are over. Like, people still care about cameras. Like, cameras were solved like a few, couple of years ago, feels like.
They work.
Yeah, they work and they do it now. So stop worrying about it. That being said, there are new cameras here, you know, and they're all for different jobs. You know, a lot of people in this industry are making a living by having this technology. And that's why everyone's here, to see how they can apply the new technology to their work and to make their living. So, you know, new like the new Phantom prototype thing they're showing off. It's pretty interesting. Like, they're actually trying to bring a more budget conscious unit into the market.
Phantom has a prototype of a industrial camera, and those features may migrate down to their more filmmaker centric, because they make medical, government, military, all sorts of high speed application cameras. That one didn't really jump out at me, because as a filmmaker, their existing line are the ones you're going to look to use. But eventually, something like CFast, more accessible media, will make its way to their cameras, I imagine. I don't know. I mean, cameras, they're done in the sense that the things that we wanted for a really long time, like progressive scan, 24p, so your video didn't look interlaced and horrible no matter what. A large sensor so you could achieve a shallow depth of field. Like, those things are all there, but there's still a lot of features to come. There's still price drops and democratization of some of these, higher end features. The spec war is done. That's where I think it's over.
Yeah, nobody's getting a headline with a 10K camera at this point. That's not going to help you out. But I mean, yeah, there are some places where there's room for improvement on technical specs on cameras, like, you know, finding a global shutter camera that has 15 stops of dynamic range, like, is still difficult.
Right, that would be like the holy grail, because if you have rolling shutter, then all of a sudden you want the same look but in global shutter, and if you have 4K, now you want high frame rate. If you have high frame rate, now you want better highlight roll off. There's always going to be something.
I still shoot ProRes 1080 for pretty much everything, so I'm happy.
So in the world of cameras, people who did not have a new camera, Red at their booth had a bunch of accessories, some of them third party, some interesting stuff there, but they've sort of just made their camera lineup more clear in terms of the progression, because as a former Red Scarlet owner, I didn't know what the Scarlet W was and how that fit in with the Red Raven. And so now there's a clear progression of, they have a 4.5K camera all the way up to an 8K camera. And as you go up in Ks, you know, it goes up in price as well. So at their booth, there were a couple of interesting things. There was a third party OLPF company called Kifertai, who makes, different looks are available with different OLPFs, which are the filter that goes in front of the sensor but behind the lens. So it's interesting to see somebody expanding on standard.
Yeah, those look actually filters. Those look cool. What did we joked about? We call them the Alexa filter. Make your Red look like an Alexa. Very much welcomed, I think.
They also have a lot of special effects and things for music videos you can achieve. One of the interesting points was that a filter in front of the lens is reliant on the focal length of the lens, and the strength of that filter will change when you change lenses. So if you have an OLPF, it is not affected by the lens choice in terms of like whether it's a 100 millimeter or a 35. So it is interesting to think about speed too. If you want to achieve a look that's global across all the different lenses, that's one way to do it.
Are they making OLPFs for other cameras as well, or just Red right now?
I don't know who else has a user swappable OLPF besides Red.
Right.
Let's talk about DJI in the smaller camera department. Obviously, they make a lot of really popular drones, and that's a category we'll get to in a second. But they also had a Osmo camera. Did you see this?
Yeah, actually, this, now that you mention it, was one of the things that stood out to me. They have this little Osmo handle that has a stabilizer on top of it.
And like a single
yeah.
hand gimbal.
Yeah, one hand operation with the Zenmuse X5R camera, which is a 4K, I think like 12 stops of dynamic range.
But the big thing with the X5R, the R stands for RAW. And previously, if you had these little tiny cameras that would go on a gimbal, like a, you know, that small, you could run around within one hand. You're talking about really highly compressed video. It's something that you might use for an action sequence. But this, I mean, I don't know. I could see using it on a narrative. It's Micro Four Thirds sensor, so you actually get some depth of field control as well.
Yeah, the interesting thing about it is, I think, I don't know, when I saw it, I immediately kind of saw the possibilities of it because I have a torn labrum, so I'm like, hey, there you go. There's a one hand. I don't have to have excuses for why I can't operate a camera right now.
You're gonna shoot a movie left-handed?
Yeah, I'll shoot a movie left-handed, and I'll just use one of those. But no, I when I was at the DJI event on Sunday before the convention started, and Claudio Miranda came to talk about that camera. Actually, I don't know how much they paid him to come talk about it, but he showed some footage that he shot with the X5R. On their new 600 drone, and he was talking about the camera, and he got into it not intending to like drones or like this 4K camera at all, and now he's going to be using a few of them on his next film. So it's a pretty interesting point of view. You know, it's always interesting when somebody comes into something being really skeptical, and then in the process of actually using it discovers this is really useful. So
yeah, I mean, as filmmakers, we are here not just to cover the trade show for other filmmakers, but also for our own projects to try to see what we might want to put to use in a movie. And I actually had reached out to DJI about the X5R previously because I'm making a basketball movie, amateur. We want to get into tight spaces. We want a really high quality image and be able to get smooth footage, but there was nothing like a RAW gizmo. And at the time, they told me, no, that's not available. The X5R doesn't work with the Osmo stabilizer. So that's the new thing there. It'll be interesting to see, in light of somebody like Sean Baker using an iPhone to make Tangerine, that's essentially what you'd be able to do with this, but you would get the kind of RAW footage and the control over the image in that scenario.
The limits of that camera, though, are still record time and battery time. Like, they just don't have the high capacity mags and the high capacity batteries figured out for that yet. So you're still looking at only being able to use it for, I think, like under an hour before you're dead and trying to.
Right. And unlike most cameras, if you stick a Anton Bauer battery on this tiny little gimbal stabilized camera, you are no longer being able to use the motors of the stabilizer. So you went to DJI's pre-NAB event. You also went to Blackmagic's. What did you see there?
The pre-event things they're all right. I mean, they're cool. I mean, I don't know what to say about them. The DJI one was at the top floor of the Bellagio, which is ridiculous casino. You know, everything's like Roman and fancy, and there's people by the pool with like columns and martinis and old couples, and it's really interesting.
Sounds like indie film.
Right. No, it's pretty dynamic. But yeah, we went to the top floor of this and into this little room, and they were serving free drinks and everything. And I went right up to the window and I was looking down because you can see down over Las Vegas, over the strip. And a guy comes up right next to me and just kind of hovers a little bit. And I was like, yeah, what would it be like to jump off this and go all the way down? And he was like, oh yeah, that would be weird. And then he like walked away. I later found out that was like the president of DJI, and so I think I alienated him.
He speaks the truth. It would be weird.
Yeah,
I think so.
I think he was weirded out by me.
You also went to Blackmagic's. What's going on there?
I mean, yeah, there's a few different announcements. You know, a lot of small stuff. The 4K duplicator is kind of interesting. It's a basically 25 recorders in one, and it has 25 SD card slots. And so you can, if you're recording a live event, you can literally have recorded that event to 25 SD cards that, in the case of what Blackmagic recommends you do, you can take those SD cards right out and sell them right there on the spot. Because we're in a world now where you can sell an SD card and people know what to do with that.
So like a band at a concert, instead of saying buy our album at the end, they can have the actual video, multicam switched video of the show you take home, have your fond memories.
Yeah, and just think 25 slots times $30. If you can sell those right there, right then and there, and the immediacy of that, you know, this has, it's a device that could make you some money. Outside of that, DaVinci 12.5 is, I feel like, the star of their announcements. Honestly, there's just a lot of new features. They're just building that software out to be really powerful, as it's always been, but just they keep taking it to another level. And I just wish my computer could run it, because I would use it.
We'll talk a little bit more about Resolve in a minute when we get to post-production.
Yeah, I mean, the big thing for me on the Blackmagic announcements was the new 4.0 firmware for the Ursa Mini. And they just sort of redid the whole operating system, essentially, for how the menu structure works. There's no more, you know, it's just simpler. There's no more going down pages to find features that are off, that you can't see right in front of you. There's a lot more fine tuning you can do. You can type in a shutter angle that you want with a little keypad. You can slide your color temperature. It's not so rigid anymore, and it has more options, and it's all right there in front of you. So that seems like a really big improvement over the last iteration.
Yeah, I mean, deep menus in a production environment where time is money can be infuriating, especially as a director if you're waiting for somebody to poke through. And as they also have a new monitor.
They have the new 7-inch Video Assist as well, which is just a bigger version of the smaller 5-inch. It's really affordable.
What was the, was it high resolution, or what were the features?
It's a 7-inch Video Assist 4K.
It's a 4K monitor.
You know, I actually don't know if it's a 4K monitor. It's
no
called
way.
4K. It would
right.
probably
has that 4K seems, inputs.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm so used to like the red monitor being
right
480 yeah. by, I mean, they have new ones, of course, but 4K in a 7-inch monitor would be crazy.
Yeah, it's called the Video Assist 4K, but
so four 4K cameras, I would imagine.
Yeah.
So let's move on to the category that I think we've seen the most stuff at NAB in, which is sort of camera support, drones, gimbals, dollies, rigs. I mean, that's sort of like where there's only so many cameras in the world, but everybody has an idea about how to support them and how to get them moving differently and all sorts of things. We've seen some innovative stuff here, I would say. What jumped out to you?
There's too many gimbals. There's too many gimbals. I mean, yeah, FreeFly announces a gimbal. What is that? 3 years ago now, and
the Movi.
Yeah, the Movi comes out, and 3 years later, just half of what you see is just all gimbals. It's like this weird trend that everybody's just trying to get a piece of that action. They're trying to get a piece of that market, and you see a lot of mediocre products that are just trying to get a piece of the action. And I don't know. I have a problem with this whole smooth, like, beautiful moving shot trend. It kind of infuriates me. It's this whole thing of like, yeah, we can do this, so we should do this. And I think it was started by FreeFly and that whole thing, and it's just kind of trickled down into this weird mediocrity fest.
Yeah, if you walk through NAB, you will see probably 100 different gimbals at least, and 100 different drones.
Yeah.
I mean, drones and gimbals are everywhere. Companies you've never heard of. It's overwhelming. Like, we, you know, in the environment of a show floor, you don't get to test and review things. So you really have no idea like who to take seriously, and whether, you know, maybe this one company you've never heard of could be a diamond in the rough, and their device is very low cost. But on a show floor, there's just no way of knowing. It's just overwhelming.
In terms of dollies, there's this the Rolacam Hercules, which is kind of the strange miracle of science. I don't really know how it works, and the story of how it was discovered on the NAB floor was pretty interesting too. It was just a guy in a backpack just coming around saying, "Hey, you want to see my product?"
Usually those don't go well.
Yeah, right. And like, "Hey, you want to come see my product?" And it was like, "Yeah," and he's like, "Okay, here it is," and pulls it out of his pocket. And this happened to Nick and Gomez, our shooters.
This is a $125 mini dolly. It fits in your pocket. It's got three wheels, and it looks like, I don't even know how to describe it, looks like a leftover doodad in the grip truck.
It looks like a piece of looks like an iris rod.
And he started it on a Kickstarter, raised over $300,000. It holds up to, you know, 30 pounds of dead weight, but really you're talking about much lower weight cameras. It's a little tiny, it's tiny, and it goes along the floor, but it has, it's powered by a motor or magnets, or what was it?
Magic. I don't know.
It's powered by magic.
By black magic.
But essentially, so it has three wheels, and on the side with two, there are tabs. So not only can you put a camera on this on the floor or perhaps on a table, I mean, this is something I could see being great for product photography. It goes forward, and you use magnets to set the start and stop points. And it's sort of like, it's dampened. I mean, it slows down when it gets there. And then you can change the angle of the tabs and actually get a curved dolly track out of this tiny little device that fits in your pocket and costs $125. Like, it's crazy.
Another thing I've been seeing a lot this year at NAB is lights on drones. And immediately I kind of think like, okay, that's a bit silly. Or I go, okay, the sound man's going to hate everybody. But then I was at the Felix booth earlier today, and Brent from Felix was telling me about an application of a light on a drone and how somebody used it in a night scene where you are shooting, you just shoot a plate of your background, you send the drone up, you light the background, you shoot a plate of the background, and then you bring the drone down, and then you light your foreground and you shoot the scene, and then you composite them. So
it's like MoCo, motion capture kind of stuff, or I don't understand.
No, just imagine a static wide shot of a campfire in the foreground, people around a campfire, but the background's completely dark. You take a drone up and you shoot lights down in the background just to light the background, but you shoot that without the foreground elements at all, just the background as a plate. Then you bring the drone down and then you'd shoot your foreground, and then you composite the two, so you have foreground and a background that's lit, you know, without having to put up a fucking huge crane or you know.
Oh, I got you. Right. Interesting.
So that was like, okay, there's an actual application for a light on a drone that's a little more creative and requires post-production. But
I saw some interesting lights. There's a company called Digital Sputnik, and they make lights that, you know, we recently published on No Film School a 11 LED light shootout by the DP Timur Sivan. And one of the things you measure is CRI. You know, LED lights are very different than tungsten. You know, it can be a certain color, but can have a spike in the green spectrum, and then skin doesn't look right. And so Timur was measuring that with a spectrograph from Siconic. Digital Sputnik is a full RGB light setup where the LEDs are full 100% saturation of red, green, and blue, along with white. And they have a mobile app that can control color, saturation, brightness, all of these things. And my ears really perked up when he said that these were actually the main lights on Star Wars Rogue One, which just shot on Alexa 65, both for practical use, because as colored lights, I'm sure in a sci-fi, you can think about a lot of ways in spaceships and so on that you'd use it, but also as the main lights. And so we went through a demo. We've got that on No Film School. By the time you listen to this, probably it's getting hard for us to keep track of, you know, what is 80 videos at this time going live on the way, and more to come. So that was interesting to me to see, you know, what he was saying is that the CRI measurement would actually be very low, but that the CRI is actually a very old standard and an antiquated way of actually measuring those lights. So anyway, check that out on No Film School.
Yeah, Arri's got a new firmware for the sky panel, their LED, which is pretty awesome. It has 10 new features in the firmware, the main one essentially being a gel library. So they have filled this LED light with a library of Roscoe and Lee filters that everyone's used to for years and years, and you just scroll through and say, I want, you know, coral frost or whatever, and it just dials it right in. So you
what kind of interface is that?
It's just a little panel on the back of the unit that you can just scroll up and down through a little thing and, you know, hit enter. But it's supposed to render, you know, your party red exactly how you would expect it to. And so basically it eliminates the need for gels entirely on that unit, which I see definitely being a trend for lighting moving forward. Gels are going to be, the gel companies are probably shitting themselves.
Right. I mean, once you have full control over the color of the light natively, you don't need to melt plastic on the set. And Kinoflow also had attachments for the back of their lights that was basically like a computer on the back of the light. And, that's sort of what Digital Sputnik was saying too, is that it's painting with light literally in the sense that your app has the kind of controls you would have in Photoshop for hue, saturation, lightness, but you're doing it with the light in the scene. So that's something that's going to change cinematography a whole lot, and, you know, probably more so than some of the camera updates we've seen this year.
Yeah, that's one thing I think is unique about NAB is the ability for the filmmakers and the manufacturers to interface with each other and figure out what the hell they both want and need. I sat in on a lighting panel at the Teradek booth or Teradek studio with some LED manufacturers and some other filmmakers, and we were kind of all just in a discussion about, you know, what do you look for in an LED and the whole subjectivity of what's quality. And it's interesting to just talk to the people who are actually making the lights and not using the lights and understanding their process too. You know, most of the manufacturers who are making LEDs are at the whim of where they source their chips. And, you know, they don't have full control over that. So they're working within limitations the same way that filmmakers are working with limitations. So it's kind of a unique way to look at it, and NAB allows you to have that conversation.
As you start throwing lots of colored lights into a scene, I can imagine that, you know, what it looks like to the naked eye, what it looks like to camera are quite different. Even shooting on the NAB showroom floor, there's lots of colored lights at these manufacturers' booths, and there are a couple times where I'm doing an interview and it doesn't look that bad to me. And you look at the camera and, of course, someone's skin tones are just entirely purple. So in the monitoring end of things, where you're able to see what's actually going into the camera more so than the naked eye, you know, what did you see at NAB this year?
Everyone's got a giant hard on for HDR. And I don't know, it seems pretty cool, I guess. I mean, you can see more than you've ever wanted to see. And things like the Atmos,
the Shogun Inferno.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I don't actually really even honestly understand this because
I barely do.
Right, so TVs are coming out that are HDR, high dynamic range. And supposedly, and I believe it, people can't really see on these TVs of, you know, 50-inch size the difference between 4K and 2K. But if you show them HDR versus non-HDR, they really see that. So this is the new thing that TV and display manufacturers have glommed onto. Like, you know, 4K probably hasn't been selling as many TVs as they wanted. 3D came and went. So the new thing is HDR. Now, I think the difference is that Netflix, Amazon, these places are going to make HDR distribution very possible and very accessible. You don't have to put on a pair of goggles to see it. So I think it's coming. But when you're using a camera in log mode and then you have a monitor that's able to take that information and display it to you in HDR, I'm not entirely sure how I consider the, you know, director's intent of how it's going to be distributed. Like, how are you monitoring that? We know what it's like to take a log image and apply a lookup table and have it look at the, you know, the way that you think it's going to be graded in the monitor. But if you're showing, if you're viewing it in HDR, and, you know, a lot of people are going to be viewing the content not in HDR, I just get confused in that area as to what the exact usage is for these monitors.
Yeah, I mean, I don't fully understand it either. The way I understand it is it's kind of like an exposure tool, honestly, more than anything. It's like, if you know exactly what you're going to get from your camera, you know what to expose, so you have the most options. Because it's more about setting highlights. It's highlights, I feel like.
Yeah, and Atomos at their booth had, you know, a torture test scene. They had this really bright lights filtering through on someone climbing a rock wall. And it's something where if you want to know the kind of information that you're truly getting in your highlights and you want to be able to see it on the monitor without having this, you know, really flat log image and get some contrast there, the HDR, they have the slider on their monitor. It's a way to see that. But it's sort of a new shift in terms of the way that you're viewing things. And it'll be interesting to see how common that becomes on film sets. So also in monitoring, Teradek and Paralynx are now one company. They have some more interaction between their transmitters and receivers, battery options, etc. But Teradek now has, a 360 monitor?
Teradek had a 360 acquisition rig.
And it streams? Or uses their devices to stream?
It live stitches multiple cameras into a 360 degree video, which you see a lot of those at NAB this year, live stitching. So you can basically shoot something and upload it to YouTube immediately, and it's in 3D. Or sorry, not 3D, in 360.
Right? You can look around in it if you have Google Cardboard, you have an Oculus, whatever VR rig you might have, which... That sounds like a good transition. Let's talk about VR and 360 at NAB overall. So GoPro has a couple of different 360 rigs, one with four cameras and one with a whole lot more. That booth has been really popular. Blackmagic, their micro studio cinema camera, the 4K one, has been used by 360 designs, and I also talked to the Diamond Brothers about their VR company, Supersphere. Basically, when you have something like a GoPro, you can do 360 video using several of them, but you don't have the kind of connectivity that you'd want in a professional environment in terms of the outputs, in terms of a way to control them all at the same time, simultaneously adjust exposure, use lenses that you can ensure are matched. Just a lot of different connectivity issues pop up when you're trying to use
Genlock
3, 4, 6, 9, however many cameras it is. So we check those out. Those are on No Film School. And then one solution I saw that was interesting was from the longtime plugin company, Revision Effects. They have a plugin called ReLens, which is basically like taking one pancake, super wide fish angle lens and turning that into 360 video, which is going to be an interesting thing to test out and see how that works for somebody who's looking to do this but doesn't want to go buy an entirely new rig. The other thing I thought that was interesting, and you can tell Mike is not saying anything because he's just not interested in 360. The other thing that I saw that was interesting was a student started a thing called Skywand VR. And the idea is by using Google Maps data and a VR headset, you can virtually put yourself in the sky and either use a joystick or just physically walk around and set keyframes for a drone path. And it's compatible right now with a DJI drone. And basically you're pre-vising and pre-planning your drone shot in virtual reality, which I thought was interesting. Probably the most popular panel at NAB overall was the Lytro cinema camera demo. We've talked about it on No Film School. This is the company that previously was sort of a consumer light field photography company that would allow you to take a snapshot that was really low resolution and then change the focal field later. We talked about it on the podcast before, but here they had the camera at NAB. They did a demo. There were 300 people in there. I wasn't able to get in because I was doing an interview right beforehand, but I have an interview with them coming up. This camera is like the size of a room. It's like looking at old computers back when they had, you know, tape reels and all sorts of analog components. But because it captures 744 megapixels at 300 frames a second, and it allows you to change basically everything about your shot later, it's the kind of technology, just like computers, that starts off really large and unwieldy and expensive and could potentially migrate down and change cinematography as we know it. So stay tuned. We're going to get an in-depth look with Lytro coming up. So if you're capturing all of that data, you need to do something with it. And that's a big question mark for Lytro, is how you're going to be able to edit this and distribute it and all of those things. So on the more indie-friendly front, let's talk about finishing and post-production in general. You mentioned Resolve 12.5 earlier. What did you see that was new in that area?
Well, there's a lot of new features in 12.5. It's that, you know, they boast 250 features, even though, you know, it's not 250 major features. You know,
I mean, the numbers are really not the thing.
Yeah, that's not really, yeah. But no, they're still filling it out as a fully functional NLE. You know, they're positioning their software to be a one-stop shop. And, you know, maybe a few years ago, you're like, yeah, right, you know, do your color and let the big boys play with the actual footage, you know, actual cutting. But now it's becoming to the point where, you know, I have friends who are starting to edit in it, and I'm sitting down watching them do it, and I'm like, okay, you know, this is happening. This could be, you know, a really, really big NLE soon. So
when I walk by Resolve, the demo at the NAB Blackmagic booth, I didn't realize it was Resolve because it looks so much like an editor now. It has this, you know, timeline with your video tracks and your audio tracks and trim mode and audio waveforms. And those are things that the last time I saw Resolve didn't look anything like that. So it's interesting to think about because they're not really saying that it's a competitor, but people are editing in it. And it certainly makes sense when you finish a film and you pass it off to someone and they start coloring and you want to make a change, you want to tweak something. If you have to go all the way back to your editor and they have all their layers and it's a convoluted process that if you could make it more of a fluid process, and maybe some people would disagree and say that when you lock, you lock. But it's interesting. It's interesting to me, certainly.
You never lock. It's never done. Keep going.
Speaking of editing, Adobe, as always, has a really huge booth at NAB. You know, they've got their full suite of tools, which, you know, we've got four people cutting in Premiere Pro in the press room. We're editing this podcast on Audition. We're editing images in Photoshop. I mean, you know, everybody's using Adobe these days. So they weren't releasing a new version of Creative Cloud per se. They were previewing some new features. It's, you know, they have a sort of annual release cycle now, so they're coming soon. They're coming this year. It'll be probably named CC 2016 unless they change to some other nomenclature. I got a chance to check out their preview version of Character Animator, or the new preview version of it, which is just great to see because it's the kind of animation tool where it uses a webcam and it films your face, and then it tracks your eyes and your mouth and your head. So as you're nodding your head and you're talking and speaking and blinking, it's doing a lot of basic animation. So it's not going to be something that's going to put Pixar out of business. But if you have a story idea that could be told in animation, it's something that you could do as an indie so much more easily by at least roughing it in that way and then going in and animating further based on the thing that you've been able to do very, very quickly.
I wonder about the potential to do that just for like previs on a regular narrative feature. Like, you don't have to do any kind of crazy character, but just animating a human figure going through the dialogue to make an animatic. I mean, I don't know. That just occurred to me just in this moment as a potential application for proving a story, you know, as an indie filmmaker.
I think that previs and animatics is a huge area that someone will get right. But when you're talking about the major Hollywood studios, you know, their budget that they're spending on previs is so much larger than the budget that most of us are spending on the entire film. So there's this area where when you think about it, storyboards don't really make any sense. Like, they're so static. They're back in a time where people were analog and were just drawing on paper. And now you have the ability with motion capture, with things like the Kinect, with Character Animator, with iPads that have accelerometers to do animatic, there's a huge capability for that. But I've been testing several right now on my own feature, and you know, it seems like there's a tremendous opportunity for someone to bring that to the masses, as it were. Also on the Adobe front, the new version of Premiere Pro is going to have more of a proxy feature set. So the ability to drop in footage and have it background transcode to proxies is something that it hasn't really had. You'd have to either transcode first and use the media manager. So in quick environments and team environments, that's going to be something to look forward to. And so I would say Adobe, like a lot of other manufacturers here at NAB in 2016, it's not necessarily new announcements. It's refining and doubling down on the things that already exist. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's actually great. It means that filmmaking is mature technologically to a certain extent. But it also means that there aren't the sexy headlines that normally, you know, would cause no film school to go down. You know, is that sort of your sense of things, Micah?
Yeah, I mean, I gotta say, it's so much more comforting, honestly. It's so much more comforting to know that you have a product that you bought a year ago and it's gonna be okay. Like, it's not gonna go out of style in 12 months, and these companies are gonna continue to support their products. I mean, to me, I've always felt kind of overwhelmed by the acceleration of technology at times, and this year feels like, okay, let's slow down, let's take a step back, let's reinforce what we've already worked on instead of jumping ship to the next thing, the next trend in technology. And for me as a filmmaker, that gives me like a comfort. Like, I don't have to be scared that, you know, I'm gonna go shoot my second feature film this summer, and I might be shooting on a Blackmagic pocket cinema camera. I might be shooting on Ursa Mini. I might be shooting on Alexa. I'm not sure yet, but either way, I feel okay about it. I feel like I'm just gonna choose the tool that feels right for the story I'm telling, and I don't have to worry about obsolescence.
Also, for owner operators, if you go spend a good chunk of your hard-earned change on something and you're planning on working it, and as a freelancer, you know, you're trying to make back your investment on the camera, if every single year something comes out and makes your investment obsolete, it's not comforting. So if you bought a camera following last year's NAB and nothing new comes out this year, that's kind of great. I mean, Canon, yeah. Blackmagic, Sony, no major new cameras. Canon's got the ME200SH, which is a smaller version of some of their existing sensors, really good in low light. Panasonic has the Vericam LT. But even AJA, who announced their Scion before, has firmware updates, better highlight roll-off. It's all just incremental improvements. And as storytellers, that's what you want to be using, a stable platform. You want to be using tools that you know. You don't want to get on set with a brand new shiny toy and find out it doesn't work, that there's some sort of quirk that you didn't expect. It's, you know, down for 45 minutes. So in that sense, as a storyteller, this kind of NAB is probably the better kind of NAB.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. And we've all been through that. We've all been through that. Like, oh, I want to wait 6 months so I can shoot it on this better piece of technology. And I did that. I was guilty of that for my first film. It was right on the cusp where the first Blackmagic cinema cameras were coming out. I was like, all right, I'm going to just push back and just wait because I want to shoot on that better format. And I went through so many problems shooting with the Blackmagic cinema camera. Now things like the Ursa Mini are here, and it feels like so much more like reliable and just better in every way. And now I can go and just be like, okay, now I'm familiar with the Blackmagic system. I love shooting on Blackmagic, and now I have a camera that's reliable. And so comforting.
So that wraps up our comforting NAB 2016 podcast. Thanks for listening to this special edition of Indie Film Weekly. You can find me on the Twitters at Ryan B. Koo. Micah, I can never say your Twitter handle correctly because you literally chose one that you mashed into a keyboard. So please tell us what it is.
It's Umuwima. Umuwima? It's Umuwima. It's my Twitter's it's Umuwima.
So you're gonna have a million followers, basically. Like I can't even spell that to this day.
Umuwima.
So follow him on Twitter, and of course you can find us at No Film School. Go to nofilmschool.com. There are an insane number of videos if you want to see these gadgets and do a virtual hands-on. I think we're going to hit 100 this year. More to come every day. We've got a master post up. We talked about, you know, probably one out of 20 things that we saw. And if you're not a gear person, you're not a cinematographer, you don't work on sets, and you don't care about this stuff, have no worries. Indie Film Weekly, as normal, we'll be back, not only as normal, but next week we'll be doing our Tribeca episode, because this year Tribeca and NAB took place at the same time. We'll be back to covering films and talking about all of those things next week. Thanks for listening.